This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Coming up, people who rely on Medicaid are now starting to need to reapply for it annually after a pandemic-related hiatus ended. We'll find out how this change is already affecting people here in Wisconsin and what recipients need to know about keeping their coverage if they still need it. Now, news of five people being shot in a mass shooting anywhere in the U.S. used to be the kind of story that might stop you in your tracks, make you reflect on the state of gun violence in the country. But this past weekend saw four different shootings with five victims each. And if you didn't live in Tampa, Memphis, Chicago, or Houston, you might not have even heard they happened. According to the nonprofit Gun Violence Archive, the U.S. reached its 400th mass shooting of the year on Saturday. That's more mass shootings than were recorded in any year before 2018. We're on pace to set a new record by the end of 2023. The rising frequency of these tragedies can make them feel less and less shocking. We can even start to feel more numb to their impact. We've talked in the past about the politics of these issues, the public health angle on gun violence. Now we're getting a psychological perspective on this idea of becoming numb to tragic events. Our next guest researches this kind of emotional numbing and how we respond to difficult societal problems. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you started feeling more desensitized to news of mass shootings? Do some stories of tragedy still affect you more than others? How do you balance your emotional response with protecting your own mental health? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Paul Slovic is a professor of psychology at the University of Oregon, where he studies human judgment, decision-making, and the psychology of risk. He's also the founder and president of Decision Research, an international research group that looks at how we make complex and risky decisions. Paul, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. Nice to be with you today.
Can you tell us a little bit about this idea of psychological or emotional numbness when it comes to tragedy? I think we have a concept that it can happen, but what does it look like in practice?
Well, we rely on our feelings to guide us in making all kinds of judgments and decisions through our day, and to as kind of a compass that guides our behavior as we navigate the day's issues. And these
Hi,
feelings.
Hi, Central Time.
Oops, sorry, we crossed a wire there. Paul, please go on.
Okay, so we trust our feelings to guide us in. And influence our behavior. We also have, science. We've learned how to create scientific ways of gathering data and analyzing it to help us make decisions about risky actions. But most of the time, we trust our feelings. And one of the things that we have learned through research, but it's also very evident when you look outside the laboratory at what's going on in the world, is that often we respond very strongly when an individual or a small number of people are at risk. But then when, as the numbers get larger, we sort of lose the feeling. The information becomes, if they're numbers, we don't see the individuals beneath the surface of the numbers, and we don't react as strongly to that. We have a kind of a concise summary of this rather shocking way our brains process feelings of risk, and where we say the more who die, the less we care. That's a form of psychic numbing, a very strong reaction to the individual, but less and less reaction as more individuals become at risk.
And literally the difference between hearing about one tragedy and two people, if I understand a research you've, I think, worked on yourself, there's a drop off just going from one person to two people in a tragedy.
Remarkably, that surprised us. Not that we don't react to two, we do, but the feeling of concern one has when you see one person in danger, it's very strong. Going from no one to one is a huge difference. Then if there are two, you don't feel twice as concerned. You may feel more, but it's not the concern than with one, but not twice. Think, for example, about if I told you that there were five people in danger from some issue, and you think about that, and you'll be concerned. And I said, "Oh, wait a minute, I was wrong. There's six people. I bet that you won't feel any different thinking about six than about five, because that's how quickly our feelings kind of reach a ceiling, which is so high at one that it doesn't have a lot of room to grow. And so, So it kind of flattens out, we become desensitized. But one other thing is even worse than this. Sometimes when the numbers are really large, it's not that we just don't react very differently when there's additions, it's that we actually react less. We say that our feelings kind of fade or collapse. You know, like if you hear about thousands or millions of people who are harmed or in danger from natural disasters or violence or whatever, they just become numbers and you don't have any feelings at all towards them unless you stop and think carefully about the reality of what underlies those numbers.
I assume the answer to this isn't, you know, we're just terrible people who don't care about large scale tragedies. What is going on in our brains that enables us to, I guess, understand one tragedy, but not really grasp the scale of a larger tragedy?
Well, I think that's a very good question. Basically, it was very adaptive when we lived in, you know, in the Stone Age in caves, you know, when we had to mostly react to things that were immediate, you know, dangers in front of us, you know, like a single individual who might be threatening us or an animal or something like that, something in our immediate experience. So we're very sensitive to these kind of threats and react very strongly. Well, that same part of our brain that reacted that way is still present in our brains today, although we have now evolved the ability to think more abstractly, more analytically, to use evidence and science as in addition to our immediate intuitive feelings. The problem is that it's easier to rely on our feelings. It usually works to get us through our day, especially if our feelings have been honed and tuned by experience. We can trust them. And so, it helps. It's very adaptive until it's not. And one of the ways that it's not is when there are more people in danger, where the numbers get big, then we can't comprehend or integrate the large numbers here. Our feelings have kind of a limit. They don't do arithmetic. Our feelings don't do arithmetic. They don't add. They don't multiply very well. We have to use the part of our brain that does the math and realize that if I tell you that there are six people at risk, that's one more important life than if there were five people. It's not that we can't do it. It's that the brain is lazy and it's easier to rely on our feelings, and our feelings don't do arithmetic.
We're talking to psychology professor Paul Slovic at the University of Oregon, looking at the idea of becoming numb to large-scale tragedies, including ongoing concerns about gun violence, incidents of mass and individual gun violence in the United States. You can join in at 800-642-1234, maybe with your experience as you see this in the news again and again over the years. How does that make you feel? Does it make you want to turn away? Understandable if so. Call 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi. First off, if you have a conscience, you can't turn away. You won't look away because you're still accountable. Number two, one is a tragedy. Two or more is a statistic. I went to Wauwatosa West in the 90s. I graduated in 1998. When I was in middle school in eighth grade, a gentleman by the name of Leonard McDowell, and I use gentleman very loosely here, walked into Wauwatosa West and gunned down the associate principal, Dale Brightlow, in the hallway in the middle of school. And it was my friend's dad. He was a kind, generous man, and everybody has these people in their lives. One is far too many, because I know too many other people I graduated with, went to school with, where we have met and ran across paths across the rest of our lives, and this has continued to affect us. And it's deep. I mean, it's deep effect, and it just, it doesn't go away. The security, anything can happen at any time. We live in a random world. But we can stop some of this. We can curtail some of it, and we have to. It is an absolute imperative in my point of view.
Marcus, thank you so much for sharing that that difficult experience. And Paul, a lot there we could talk about from Marcus. First of all, the impact of a shooting, I think sometimes, again, we're statistics-driven, the number of people dead, maybe the number of people wounded. Marcus reminds us, it affects a lot more people.
Yes, and certainly there's, you can see the trauma that Marcus experience there. And that's very real. And that's what happens if you experience this, or you know people you care about or love who have experienced it, then this is deeply disturbing, and it doesn't leave you. I mean, you're not relying on statistics, you're relying on, you know, the emotionality of what this means. And so that's, and one has to think about this, for example, even if you're not a direct victim, like now, because of so many shootings, you know, some people are saying, well, the way to deal with this is to, you know, to arm teachers, to put armed guards in the schools, and to continually drill the children as to how to protect themselves against an active shooting in the schools. Well, think about this. Most of these schools, there fortunately has not been a shooter, but we're already having them practice responding as though there were a shooter in the schools. Think about that sort of a secondhand trauma, which will likely color their view of the world and the people around them and the safety. Children are very vulnerable. They have a lot of fears, and we're drilling this into them, you know, that you can't trust people around you because they might come to your school and shoot you. Then this is, even when it doesn't happen, it's traumatic. So it's, I mean, I agree with you that it's a problem. It needs to be managed, and we have managed some of these major problems in the past through sort of what Nicholas Kristof calls public health type measures. Like, for example, we brought down the harms from smoking through education and regulation. We've regulated traffic safety so that there's a lot fewer traffic accidents and deaths than there used to be through education, through design of the environment, through regulation. So I think we need to take that approach. I don't think we'll be able to get rid of guns, nor should we desire to get rid of all guns. We need to manage these in a sensible way.
Thanks again for the call, Marcus. We're talking to University of Oregon psychology professor Paul Slovic about the idea of psychic numbing, how we get desensitized over time to repeated tragedies like gun violence. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you find yourself feeling numb to news of mass shootings? Does the frequency of the tragedies make you feel less hopeful that we can prevent them? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Paul Slovic, psychology professor at the University of Oregon, who researches decision-making and risk. He's with us today to talk about how our brains respond to tragedies, including mass shootings, and how we can build up emotional and psychological numbness over time. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions. We heard from Lisa. Lisa says, when one person is in danger, we feel like there's something we can do about it. When thousands of people are in danger, we feel like there's nothing we can do. And Paul, I think that's an important part of the story and your research, the idea of, you know, can we make a difference in the face of larger scale problems?
Absolutely. That's a very important observation. And it deals with the issue of efficacy. It's one thing to be aware of the problem, and if you feel that you can't do anything about it, well, then it makes sense to make yourself numb, to turn away from it, because why torture yourself worrying and fretting about things you can't control? So you turn your attention to things that maybe you can do something about. So the issue of efficacy, again, efficacy is another aspect of the way our feelings can deceive us, just like numbing is a way that our feelings deceive us about the magnitude of a problem. Our brains let information in that conveys feelings that may not be relevant. So let me back up here. We try to do something about a problem because first there's a need, and second because we feel effective doing it. And if our attention is called to the fact that we can only do a little bit on the problem, or we can't fix the problem, and there's a lot that we can't fix, that creates bad feelings, which our brain lets in to mingle with the good feelings about doing something useful, and it devalues the good feelings, and it doesn't feel as good to do something helpful because of the feelings, that bad feelings of what you can't do. So we get demotivated from doing what we can do because of what we can't do, which may be irrelevant. And so basically we have to appreciate that even if we can't fix a problem entirely, or we're only a small, you know, in a sense, you know, a small drop in a large bucket, that drop may be very important. And we've got research that shows that even when people can really save a life, if they're shown other lives they can't save, then they don't do the help that they can do. And that's not rational. So we have to be aware of the fact that our minds deceive us, and not let that happen. And one way that we can actually be more effective, even if the problem is big, is by joining forces with organizations that are dedicated to the problem and can magnify our effect. You know, support these organizations with financially, support them by working for them or with them, by turning out for events that they put on, and supporting their political activity that is aimed at helping in this problem. So you can magnify your efforts and your efficacy by joining in with others.
Let's go back to our callers. Randy is with us in Madison. Randy, hi.
Good afternoon. Ironically, I was just composing a Facebook post about how the sheer volume of charges coming up against Donald Trump makes him less weighty. I think the volume decreases the seriousness. And a few years ago, a photographer got a picture of a father and a daughter drowned trying to reach, I believe it was Italy. And suddenly people were talking about, oh, this is a crisis. Same thing, a photographer managed to get a picture of a DHS agent actually forcibly removing a child from their mothers.
Randy, I gotcha. The power of photography, Paul, I think you've also looked at.
Absolutely. Again, we're talking about feelings. So even though numbers are not good at stimulating our feelings, images, photos, testimony of people, these have powerful impacts. Very dramatic evidence of this that we studied a few years ago involved the war in Syria that started in 2011 when people started protesting against the government of Syria. The government started fought back by rather than listening to the protesters, killing the protesters, and that escalated. So 4 years later, there had been 250,000 Syrians who died in these battles in Syria, and millions fled as refugees. Well, we looked on Google for evidence of concern about this. You know, people searching under Syria refugees, there wasn't any, and that changed overnight with the photograph that went worldwide of the little boy on the beach who was trying to flee with his family from boat capsized, and the boy was washed up. A very shocking picture. And overnight, people started searching for Syria and refugees. But even more important, they started donating money to aid agencies. Overnight, for example, in Sweden, the Swedish Red Cross, which had taken in 150,000 Syrian refugees in 2015, there and set up a fund to care for them. That fund increased from about $8,000 a day to $430,000 overnight when that photograph came up. And it shows that how statistics of 250,000 deaths didn't make a difference, but that photo woke people up. And another interesting thing is that it lasted, but it didn't last forever. A month later, everything had kind of filtered down to where it was before. So when you see a dramatic photo like this, it does make it, wakes you up, engages you emotionally, makes you want to act, and it provides a window of opportunity when you are ready to do something. But that window of opportunity doesn't last forever. And the same thing with a school shooting. After the school shooting, people are engaged and they want to do all kinds of things. And then over time, it may fade. So you've got to act quickly when the emotion is still raw and motivating.
Randy, thanks for that call. Time for one more caller. Martha is with us in Menominee. Martha, hi.
Yeah, I think that this is a good discussion because these things can numb you or they can really make you angry, like I am about these school shootings, because they are mostly preventable. And if we didn't have cowards kowtowing to the gun industry, children would be safe and wouldn't have to go through this trauma.
Martha, thanks for the call. Paul, reacting with anger and I think calls to action as opposed to a numbing in the face of gun violence or other tragedies. And in our last minute, your thoughts on what we do with our reactions?
Well, amen. I mean, anger is a powerful emotion, and I think we need to be angry about the way guns are used abusively in our society and take so many cause so much trauma and harm, different from anywhere else in the world, I think, in terms of the amount of violence like this. And it is not necessary. It can be greatly reduced, and we need to be angry enough to work politically to make it happen.
Martha, thanks for that call. And Paul, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Paul Slovic, professor of psychology at the University of Oregon, where he studies human judgment, decision-making, and the psychology of risk. He's also founder and president of Decision Research. That's an international research group that looks at how we make complex and risky decisions. He's with us today to talk about the idea of psychic numbing and how tragedies like gun violence start to feel less severe as they become more common. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, take a tour of land trusts around Wisconsin and find out what they mean for conservation and public land access to nature. You can get the conversation started right now. Are you involved in a land trust, maybe either on your own property or as a volunteer or part of a conservation group in your part of the state? Or do you have questions about what those are, how they work, and or how to get involved in them? Join in with your questions. You can email now, ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Then join that conversation tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Remember, you can stream this, that, and all conversations on the Ideas Network online at WPR.org. Or you can always download the Wisconsin Public Radio app to your phone or tablet. On Food Friday last week, we talked about non-alcoholic cocktails and other zero-proof beverages. We've got a couple recipes from our guest up at WPR.org/Food Friday. We heard from some of you during the show, and we've gotten more comments on email and on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jim emailed, "My favorite NA drink is tonic with a splash of Rose's Lime. Too bitter to drink quickly, doesn't need to be fancy. Nazdrovia, guys." Jim, Nazdrovia to you, too. Thank you. Leah says, "I think NA beers have come a long way from just O'Doul's. I love Athletic beer and Heineken Zero. My favorite NA drink right now is half NA beer and half lemonade." So I guess a shandy. Dave on Facebook has a beer recommendation. He writes, "Sprecher root beer is awesome. I'm a big fan of mixing some fresh squeezed citrus, cocktail cherries, and their juice. A few drops of bitters, lots of ice, top it off with cold water. This weekend, I bought a zero-proof bourbon. Haven't tried it yet. I'll report back on my first cocktail I make with it." Keep your ideas coming on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, two huge films open this weekend, and the 1A Movie Club is back to review one of them. It's the pink one. Guest host Celeste Headlee shares all your Barbie highs and your Barbie lows today at 6 on 1A+. Now, over the next year, about 1 in 4 Wisconsinites will need to renew and see if they can stay covered by Medicaid and Badger Care Plus. That's according to an announcement last week from the State Department of Health Services. It had been a requirement that people reapply each year for those programs until the pandemic prompted the federal government to enact continuous coverage. That went away earlier this year. So begins the slow process of getting things back to the way they were. It's been called Medicaid unwinding. DHS Secretary-designee Kirsten Johnson says that Wisconsin's seen at least 60% of Medicaid members who were scheduled to renew their coverage in June actually apply to see if they're eligible to stay covered. You can join at 800-642-1234. Does this affect you or someone you know? Have you already reapplied for continued coverage? Did you hear back whether you're eligible or not? How did having that continuous enrollment affect your health care during the pandemic? What questions do you have? But what's going on here? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Bobby Peterson is founder and executive director of ABC for Health, Inc. Bobby, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Let's start things off just by reminding us which programs we're talking about. People may hear about Medicaid enrollment and think, well, I'm not on Medicaid. Well, but they might be on Badger Care Plus, which is Medicaid funded. Give us a sense of what kind of programs we're talking about, who's affected here.
There's a lot of programs. Medicaid, you know, is the sort of the big picture of a lot of individualized programs. Badger Care, Badger Care Plus for adults without dependent children. There are kids that are in long-term care that might be on Medicaid, foster care, special needs adoptions. It goes on and on. Kids with disabilities. It's a huge program, and it has a big footprint across the state of Wisconsin.
Last time we talked to you, this unwinding was coming up, and the message was it's not going to hit everybody at once. It's going to be staggered over a number of months, basically for over the course of a year. Well, now here we are into it. We've got a month's worth of information. What have you seen, Bobby, as we start this renewal process?
Well, it's as expected for the most part. I think, you know, this is a big program affecting a lot of people, and the way that it's been set up, you know, we didn't want to have a situation where we just hit a cliff and everybody was on and then they were off. So it's called unwinding for a reason, because it's a slower process. It's going to take over the course of the next year. We'll be identifying batches of people. The state will be identifying batches of people, sending them notices, getting renewals. You know, it's difficult because, you know, we had a period of everyone being covered, you know, that had been applied, had stayed covered, didn't lose their coverage. And you get, you know, at some point you might get a little more complacent in terms of keeping some of your information up to date, mails, moved, are you keeping, you know, things current with the income maintenance agency at the county? So that's why we have this process now, where we're really trying to be as careful as we can, identify as many people as possible, keep them covered whenever possible. You know, we understood that during the COVID pandemic, it was really essential that everyone maintain coverage. We didn't want people going on and off during a pandemic. You want to have everyone have access to care, medicine. I think we should have this, you know, all the time in some ways, because it really is important to maintain that coverage. But the pandemic, thankfully, did, you know, wind down itself. And so now we're getting to a point where we're really working to make sure those people that have coverage either keep their Medicaid coverage or Badger Care Plus coverage or transition to something else.
I want to look at the June numbers here. Now, the Department of Health Services said we had about 99,000 people who are due to renew that coverage. 61,000-ish people took some action to initiate the renewal process. That leaves 30-plus thousand people who didn't, but that can mean a lot of different things, right? It could be great news. They've got a good job. They've got health coverage through it. Could be bad news. They moved. They didn't get those renewal papers. And I don't think we know. Do we have a sense, Bobby, of who those people are and what's going on?
No. No, I don't think we do. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of speculation, but I think for the most part, we want to try and just identify those folks as much as we can through family, friends, neighbors, the faith community, schools. Did they miss their enrollment? Do they still have an opportunity to have a late renewal and get their coverage? Were they still eligible? Those are the folks we really want to make sure that we keep covered, because access to appropriate health care means you're getting the care that you need, you're getting regular physicals, hopefully, and reviews, you're getting the medications that you need to help stabilize your situation, allowing you to participate in the workforce. So there's a lot of really positive benefits to maintaining that coverage and that connection to Badger Care, Medicaid, or seeing if you're eligible for a special enrollment period in the marketplace, because a lot of people can transition to that type of coverage as well.
Talking to Bobby Peterson, founder and executive director of ABC for Health, talking about Medicaid renewal, Badger Care renewal. If you were on these programs during the height of the pandemic, you didn't have to renew each year. That's over. Now you do. Letters are going out to people. You might have gotten one to renew last month. Love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. If you or someone you know, a loved one, or you work with people in your community who rely on these programs, do you have questions about what people should be doing, watching for right now, or maybe an experience to share? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Now, Bobby, one message that was out there before this unwinding started was, everybody who's on BadgerCare shouldn't just run and try to reapply. They should be waiting for to be notified over the course of the year, right?
That's right. That's right. It's, there's a process and you know, it's helpful if you know what your renewal date is. You know, you can contact the consortium, you can set up an account within access.wisconsin.gov. You can enter your information, learn your renewal date that way. But once you know your renewal date, maybe it's, you know, it's sometime next year. You can sit tight and wait for your renewal, before your renewal date. The state has some key deadlines for right now. If you're in July, you should have gotten your materials in. You were mailed them back in June, so that material should go in. If your renewal date is in August, you probably got some of your packets. And after August, once August begins, you might want to submit your renewal materials. The state is saying you should do it by August 17th to make sure that the processing occurs appropriately. So there's a timeline. You can learn about your renewal date. You can help a family member or friend by contacting the consortium or going through access.wisconsin.gov to get that renewal date. But don't renew early, because you might be compromising some opportunities for eligibility. You want to wait until your renewal date, and you want to help your family member or friend to learn what that renewal date is and watch for that packet. Make sure your information is current with the county as well. Did you move? Had a friend that moved, or a family member that was receiving any of the various forms of Medicaid, making sure that they have updated their contact information to the consortium so they're getting their mail.
Now, what if somebody goes to access.wisconsin.gov to check that date, realizes, it was June. It was last month. I didn't get the packet. I didn't notice the packet. What do they do in that case?
Yeah, you should contact the consortium. You may be eligible for a late renewal window if it's within the last 3 months, which it would be. So if you still maintained, the right income level for eligibility for the program that you're on, remember, there's a lot of different categories and programs. It might be something that requires you to have a disability. It may just be based upon your income. Sometimes it's both. But you may be eligible for a late renewal window. So it's worth checking. It's worth identifying whether you can get that application or that renewal process through a late renewal. And then that's good news, because it's an opportunity to maintain your healthcare coverage. If you're not eligible, then you may be eligible for a special enrollment period because you've lost your Medicaid or BadgerCare Plus coverage. You may be eligible for a special enrollment period in the marketplace. So you could be, if you're depending on your income level, you could be eligible for advanced premium tax credits. You may be able to get into a plan that is similar to the plan you had under BadgerCare Plus. So there's options looking forward to for people that may have determined that they're not eligible for BadgerCare Plus moving forward, but then they'll get referrals to the marketplace to evaluate that type of coverage.
We're talking to Bobby Peterson, founder and executive director of ABC for Health, Inc., and we're looking at the end of a pandemic-era continuous re-enrollment plan for Medicaid and BadgerCare Plus, finding what's happening, getting some practical advice along the way, and what people who want to continue coverage need to do about it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest? Are we talking about you? Are you a participant in one of these Medicaid or Badger Care programs? Have you reapplied already? Or is someone in your family using this plan? Are you in a community group that's helping do outreach on these issues and making sure people get health care coverage that they are eligible for? Let us know what you're seeing out there. Join in at 800-642-1234. Again, that number is 800-642-1234. 1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We continue our talk with Bobby Peterson, founder and executive director of ABC for Health, Inc., looking at the start of a Badger Care Plus and Medicaid renewal process. This for the first time since the beginning of the pandemic, finding out what's going on, what people who use these services need to know. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Love to hear if you are using any of these, Medicaid, Badger Care, Badger Care Plus, a wide variety of things with this renewal period going on now. Join in with your questions about eligibility, reapplying, and more. If you work in healthcare coverage, what are you seeing yourself? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Bobby, getting back to some numbers from the Department of Health Services, their report last week said about 37% of the renewal applicants in June, over 22,000 people, were found to be ineligible. What kind of things might lead to people who, you know, received these programs through Medicaid over the last few years now no longer being eligible?
Sometimes there's limited eligibility based upon a pregnancy that someone had. And so after the pregnancy, the income guidelines change a bit. And so maybe the child continues with eligibility, the mother may no longer be eligible. But those are some of the issues that, you know, the first batch of people, there's a larger group of folks that were being reviewed, that there was some feeling that there would be a number of those that wouldn't have continued eligibility. But the group moving forward, I think it's still open. We're still not sure about what the numbers are going to look like, and they might be changing over the course of time. The numbers that you see up on the state website, as late renewals come in and other things happen, those numbers could adjust over the course of the next several months too.
If someone has applied and gotten bounced back, said, yeah, no, not eligible for this anymore, is there recourse if they think that was in error?
Yes. And, that's kind of some of the work that we do at ABC for Health. We're a nonprofit public interest law firm. So we work with clients and folks that have maybe been denied and they need their situation evaluated. It's a complicated program, as I said, Rob. It's got a lot of, nooks and crannies. There's errors that are made. Sometimes they're unintentional, but, you have to review the rules. There's people that are eligible for extensions because there's state policies that say if you lost your coverage and you're in a family and because of excess income, well, we want to encourage people to work and to earn more. And so we give you the opportunity to get an extension. So you may actually qualify for a extension under Badger Care Plus because your income rose during the pandemic. And it might be an opportunity to extend coverage if you don't have another coverage option. There's other situations where maybe you have, you think you're not eligible anymore because, you're working, but suddenly you lose your job. Well, there's opportunities to evaluate based upon that month and the income, or if you're self-employed, people that are self-employed and their income fluctuates, it might fall between eligibility for Badger Care Plus and the marketplace. And there are special programs and features called Gap Filler that allow you to average some of your income and maintain eligibility for these programs. But because it is so complicated, definitely there are situations where people lose coverage. They can appeal, they can request a fair hearing. We certainly want them to try and work through the process. We resolve a lot of issues just, making sure we contact the consortium, understand the rules, we review the handbook sections, make sure people are getting what they need and deserve to get the healthcare that they're supposed to under the law in Wisconsin.
Now, we're mostly focusing on people who've already received these Medicaid and Badger Care and related assistance. How about people who don't but are eligible and maybe don't know about it? How do people get the word out, first of all, to an audience that could qualify but doesn't know about it? And what do those people need to know to see if they qualify for these services?
It's important. I mean, I just came from a meeting earlier this afternoon where there's a statewide coalition of folks that are really interested in outreach and education. There's the wiscover.com website that's got a lot of great information for people that might be looking at BadgerCare Plus or Medicaid coverage or the marketplace. A lot of good information. There's navigators that are available, application assisters, insurance brokers that can help in the process as well. So part of what we're seeing right now is this intense effort at identifying people through the unwinding, making sure we maintain their coverage, hopefully, you know, raising the level of coverage for everyone. So we're talking about it. People are looking at the opportunities of coverage. I can get some pretty affordable healthcare coverage through the marketplace, or I can get it through BadgerCare Plus because, you know, my hours are low and I'm you know, struggling a little bit. So there's a lot of opportunities, and we all benefit, you know, from people having coverage. We don't want people to go without the medical care that they need. We don't want people to have to run up medical debt. That's stressful, creates a drag on the court system. It transfers costs to other people as well. So avoiding medical debt, maintaining coverage, helping people get the care and coverage that they need and deserve, that's really what it's all about.
Talking to Bobby Peterson from ABC for Health, looking at health coverage in Wisconsin. Re-enrollment started up last month for Medicaid, aka in many cases Badger Care, here in Wisconsin. Bobby, turning to the Affordable Care Act marketplace, you've mentioned that a couple times. Let's preview a little bit. I think November 1st starts the next open enrollment period. It's not that far off in the scope of things. What can people start thinking about if they're going to re-enroll or looking to enroll for the first time coming up in that open enrollment period?
Yeah, well, it's a good time to give yourself, you know, a bit of a health insurance tune-up, evaluate the plans that you have, look at opportunities for, you know, continuing the plan that you're on if you're happy, or shop the marketplace to see if there's, you know, other opportunities for you. If your income is changing, you may be eligible for more advanced premium tax credits. And you may not have to wait to open enrollment because, as I said, you know, if you lose your Medicaid coverage or BadgerCare Plus through the unwinding, that triggers a special enrollment period for you to apply for the marketplace right then and there. So it you know, the open enrollment during the marketplace is of course a big event, and we do, you know, a ton of outreach and education, but sometimes people don't have to wait. They may have a special enrollment period where they can get their coverage much more quickly.
What other things might make someone eligible to check out the Affordable Care Act marketplace not waiting to the enrollment period? You mentioned, of course, if, say, last month you lost eligibility for Medicaid being one of those. What other cases could people say, yeah, I want to enroll, I want to go to healthcare.gov right now?
Maybe they got married, you know, maybe they moved, you know, maybe they lost their employer-sponsored coverage. And so some of these will trigger a special enrollment period, so you can contact a navigator or broker just to see what your options are. Go to healthcare.gov. There's a window shopping tool. You can evaluate plans. Good idea to go check it out beforehand to get an idea of the plans that are available in your area. Look at what some of the costs are. You can identify the physicians and the people that are providing care to you, or the what networks they might be in. So again, it's, you know, this whole idea of this sort of a little health benefits tune-up, review, checking out what your coverage is, and then thinking ahead, you know, what are the changes that are going to be occurring? You know, are you going to be turning 65 this year and become eligible for Medicare coverage? You have a child or son or daughter who's an adult but's turning 26 and going off your health insurance plan. Do you have kids that are going off to college that need to be thinking about what coverage they're going to maintain because they're going outside of the network? There's a lot of opportunities to review and evaluate both at the current what's going on, but also look ahead for the next, you know, 6 months or a year and see what changes are occurring and how you can be prepared to deal with that change for yourself or for a family member. Maybe it's a parent.
Bobby, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's Bobby Peterson, founder and executive director of ABC for Health, Inc. We talked to him today about the beginning of a process for people to renew coverage from Medicaid and BadgerCare Plus after there had been this continuous re-enrollment period during the pandemic. We'll get some resources up for you over at wpr.org/centraltime. Healthcare.gov is the place to look for information and apply under the marketplace. Access.wisconsin.gov is the place for this re-enrollment period here in Wisconsin. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, some of the latest inflation numbers are starting to look lower. Is inflation actually on the way out, or is it just too soon to tell? We'll look at some of the factors that are driving inflation and the latest trends in the prices we pay. Plus, the World Health Organization raised concerns about a popular artificial sweetener. A medical expert looks at aspartame and whether or not we should be worried. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, Russia is now attacking Ukrainian port cities and grain supplies. The USDA's chief economist talks about risks to the global food system. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.